Welcome to Seemingly Ordinary. This is a podcast where I interview people who on the surface might appear to be ordinary, but underneath the surface, they have amazing things going on. This is part two of my interview with Stacy Brown. Stacy Brown is homeschooling seven kids. She is doing an amazing job as far as I am concerned. I've been a teacher for a long time, and it's very heartening to see a lot of different systems, different strokes for different folks, different people belong in different types of schools. Well, her kids are doing amazing things. They are performing above grade level. They love to read, but they also love to work with their hands. They are leatherworking. They are making knives. They are using their skills to farm. They are raising animals. Stacy has a very interesting philosophy with her kids. Whenever they want to learn something, she says yes to everything. They want to learn about cattle, they buy cows. They want to learn about raising crops, they plant a garden. They want to do knife making, she buys a forge so that they can do this kind of thing. It's truly amazing what she is doing. So, welcome back. Here is part two.
Yes,
do you feel like it's the same in the artistic world? You know, people putting on plays, putting on concerts, learning how to play an instrument, all those type of things?
Yeah, like I said, everyone wants your money.
Okay.
So there's opportunities abounds for all,
okay.
All types of people.
Okay. What about the time suck that these things can... Because I've spoken with some people who have done some homeschooling, and once they put their kids in school, they were actually just a little shocked at how much time the athletics can absorb. Like if you're sending your kid to normal school, you think that this is totally normal and it's not necessarily a big deal. But for a lot of the homeschoolers, you know, they would realize, well, wow, practice is at least 2 hours after school. But then when it comes to, you know, changing clothes and all the rest of that, now you're looking at, you know, 2 hours and 45 minutes. And that's like every day. And then on the weekends, well, okay, we might have to come in and watch film and all the rest of that. So, I mean, there could be another 5 hours on Saturday. So if you add all that up, I mean, then on game night, like say it's a Friday night or whatever, then that's basically from the end of school until midnight. You know, something along those lines. It could easily be anywhere from 20 to 25 hours per week, if not right. More.
Yes. So that's the very last thing that I want to do with my life
okay.
is take my kids to sporting practices and spend my weekends watching kids play sports.
Okay.
It's the very last thing that I would want
okay.
to do.
Okay.
So we play, I mean, and I'm not like judging like other families uh-huh. because if that's what
right.
they want to spend their time
right.
doing,
right.
then I think that's great.
Right.
But that is not where my family
it's
focused.
It's just not for you.
No, because
and it's not
it's,
for your kiddos.
It's another like splintering too. Mm. You know, I think it's weird to tell kids that I'm going to give you all of my time
mm-hmm.
and all of my money
mm-hmm.
and it's important to me that you play baseball.
Okay.
It's not important to me. So
okay.
I tell my kids, and this is probably not a popular opinion, but I say,
that's
do
okay.
you want to play baseball? And they'll say yes. And I'll say, well, I might drop you off at practices and games. So if you want to play baseball,
mm-hmm.
then I think that's wonderful.
I mean, you
but,
have seven kids.
But I might not be there for all of the things.
Yeah.
Do
I mean,
you still want to play? And they'll say yes, or they'll say no. But I would never want my kids to think I was playing. They were playing baseball for me, or anything for me.
Okay,
like it's
okay. No, I totally get what you're saying. I'm in the age bracket, and maybe it's just where I also grew up. But there were any number of parents who would allow their kids to go out for about one sport per year,
mm-hmm.
just because it does absorb a lot of the kids' time. And they would say, "Gosh, you know." I mean, I knew some other people who went out for four sports. Because it was a 1A school and you could go out for four sports. So, I mean, they were literally involved in a sport, you know, roughly like 9.5 months or more out of the year. And, you know, that is 20 to 25 hours out of your week. You know, some people liked being busy and all the rest, but there was just no way the parents were going to all the games or even 1/3 of the games.
Yeah.
And they were not giving them rides to practice either. Of course, now that's a small town for you because
yeah.
you could walk or you could ride your bicycle or if you had a car, then okay, away we go.
Right.
I just like this modern thing has very much evolved where parents go to every game. Mm-hmm. It's just difference. And I just would assume if you had more kids, if you had one kid, well, yeah, you'd probably go to every game. Sure. But you have seven.
No, I have a great deal going on right now. I have two boys, and you know, so we live in near a small town, and our kids have just kind of played some rec sports through our small town, which is perfect for us because we're never going to pay thousands of dollars for our kids to play sports, and we're not going to spend our weekends at sporting fields. So anyways, two of my kids want to play soccer. They are close enough in age that they can play on the same team.
Oh, nice.
And the coach lives on our street and picks them up for practice and drops them off every time. So
I like it.
It's like the perfect soccer.
Yeah, it is.
It's so it's awesome. They come, they go, they come home, they played soccer. We do go watch their games on Saturday mornings, and that's all it is required.
Okay. I feel like a good topic to jump to on this next would be, I guess, the whole concept of helicopter parenting or snowplow parenting, because it sounds like you don't do it.
Well, I think it's confusing because, like, yes, I'm with my kids all the time.
Uh-huh.
Except for...
But when you drop them off at activities or they go to activities, then then they're not. And
they're
you
not.
Also said that they're kind of limited on electronics. And,
right.
You know, so like, I don't know, there's just some psychologists who feel that the reason this generation is so anxious is because they're being monitored all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their phones have location. Their parents can call or text them at any given moment. You know, then there's like the helicopter and the snowplow parents who are kind of like up in the kids' business all the time. And then they track each other, that the kids have location on their phone for their other friends. So they know where their friend is on a Saturday night. You know, I'm sorry, I'm like a Cold War kid. This just sounds like, you know, the Soviet Union tracking everybody or like the East German secret police. I personally don't like it. I'm Gen X. People, you know, we had a lot of unsupervised time and people didn't necessarily know where we were.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sorry, I didn't get into too much trouble. I was like a straight A kid.
Yeah.
I think if I would have started to get into trouble, my parents would have modified my life. You know, but, you know, just it teaches people to be independent, make their own mistakes, and not be surveilled.
Yeah, no, my kids don't get phones until they can both drive and have jobs that they drive to.
Okay.
So my 16-year-old, he has a phone, but my 14-year-old freshman, he has a job, but he does not drive himself there, so he doesn't need a phone.
Okay.
And my little kids, when I drop them off for practices, like, there's been times where I drop them off at the wrong place or it gets done early.
Okay.
And do you know what they have to do?
Okay.
They have to borrow a phone from an adult.
Okay.
And they call me and they say, Mom, you took us to the wrong place. And then I come and get them. And it's not even that big of a deal.
Right. Yeah. No, of course. Yeah. I mean, gosh, how did we grow up without phones?
Right. It's it's really, it's okay.
So, because I think you mentioned your age, and so you probably spent the first 16 years of your life at least without a phone.
Yeah. I was 17 when I got a phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. All righty. What are your thoughts then on having kids with location on their phone so that you can track, oh, he moved into the practice field now. Oh, wait, he's moving toward the concession stand.
Right. So my oldest son, I do have that on his. And the only reason, like, I like it and he likes it too is because, like, I can see where he is when he's driving.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can see that he's driving home, I don't call him.
Okay.
And I don't text him.
Okay.
If I see the little cursor moving, like, I, like, know he's coming home and I just leave him alone.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of nice to just be like, he's fine.
Would it bother you if he turned off his location?
I don't know. I mean,
it just hasn't happened.
Yeah, it hasn't happened. I think we want to put the location tracker on my husband's phone for both of us do so we can find him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're all of us are okay with like our family being tracked by each other, just
each other.
So we know, like, mom's at the grocery store, dad's still at work, you know?
Okay.
So
okay.
I think, I like, but I think it has to be a little bit of a mutual, you know, family thing.
Okay. So on all of these topics that we've mentioned so far, what haven't we talked about that, or what haven't you been able to say that you wish I would have let you say?
Well, we haven't talked about entrepreneur kids
yet. Okay, I really wanted to talk about that because thank you for bringing that up because your kids all have special skills. They're making knives and they're doing leather work. I think you said leather work.
Yeah.
And they are doing carpentry and these are lifelong skills.
Sure.
And, you know, I think a lot of people know that there's just a gigantic deficit of people who can work in various trades. The trades these days pay anywhere from like the median income to double the median income. If you go into business for yourself, then you can make much more than double the median income, which is $55,000 a year. And also too, these jobs are hard to, you can't really like, you know, outsource them to India. And I don't think AI is going to be taking these jobs anytime soon.
Right.
So these are just terrific things, and your kids are picking all these things up as hobbies. Doesn't mean that they have to do them, but the option's there.
Yeah.
So tell me about the entrepreneurial
kids. So my oldest son, he, like I said, he's working, and he is doing three businesses that he's kind of rolling with his.
Whoa. He's doing three?
Yes. Oh, I know. We don't just do small things. We have to be big things. So they're all part-time. One of his passions has been this year is he's been buying like junky old trailers and like flatbed trailers and he brings them home and he repaints them and he puts new boards on and puts new tires and does all the rewiring and then just and flips them.
Okay, flips them.
So that's been a really fun business for him. Yeah, so he is a pretty talented remodeler because we've done a lot of remodeling at our house. So he's putting in a closet for one of our friends in their basement.
Okay.
So he's pretty good with all of those sorts of things. But his big business this year has been him and his best friend, who's also homeschooled, they started a like tree removal service.
Oh, cool.
But then they also they cut it into firewood and then sell it. So they get paid kind of on both ends for cutting the wood, but then selling it for firewood to somebody else.
That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, so he's had a really fabulous junior year.
Okay.
He's doing some classes with me, doing junior college, and then running these own little businesses and working for some other people too. So it's been really great.
And they feel like they have time to do all
this. They do have time. Yeah, they do have time. He's still home a lot. You know, he has to be home to do his schoolwork, you know, on those off days. And then he's home on the weekends too.
How much money are they making doing this? If you don't mind my...
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't want to say, don't say.
But I don't know, but like... I mean, because it's paid differently. It's not like hourly. So it's, you know, he'll get paid like, it's by the job. So, you know, so it might be like $100, $200 for a cord of firewood. I don't know how much it is actually.
Well, how about taking down a big tree, like a tree that's 50 years old or something?
I don't really know, but it's good. It's really good money.
And I mean, so I spoke with Larry Ryan.
Oh,
Ryan Lawn and Tree. And I mean, that's a biggest business in Kansas City. Last time I spoke with him was about seven or 8 years ago, and I think he was making something like $16 million a year.
Yeah.
And a big tree, if you take down a big tree, was $2,000 at the time. It's probably more. So how big of a tree can your son take
they
down?
They can't do a Larry Ryan-sized tree because they don't do a lot of the pulleys and the ropes.
Yeah.
So it has to be something that can be cut down with a chainsaw at the moment.
From the ground.
Uh-huh. They work for somebody who does do those big tree removals.
So they're learning.
And so it's been really fun to watch. My second son, he wants to sell all of his woodworking, and he is also raising pigs this year.
Oh, wow.
So that's been his funny thing that he's been getting into is he has a sow, and that he's going to borrow a male pig from our neighbor and breed piglets to sell. And then my third son, he just opened an Etsy shop this week, and he is selling antique fishing lures for striper bass tackle.
Wow.
And then he sells stuff on Facebook Market all the time.
Okay.
He raises rabbits to sell for meat and money.
So some of these boys have three separate businesses going.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's kind of been a shift in our homeschool, like in our family life, because all four of my boys, even my 10-year-old, have jobs outside of the house.
Okay.
And they are all like their minds are just on fire on like, who do I want to be?
Right.
What do I want to do?
They are so practical with this stuff, too.
Yeah. And they take it and run. Again, this is not me telling them to do these things. This is not my husband, Jake, telling them to do these things. These are like their passions, their dreams, and they are just
running with it. You just introduce them to a lot of stuff, and then they just say, oh, I think I want to raise rabbits.
Yeah. And we say, okay.
Okay. Okay. Wow, that's great. I love how you say yes to everything.
I try to.
Gotcha.
You know, I grew up in a family where, you know, my mom, if we asked for animals, she always said yes.
Okay.
And so I think, and my parents were pretty innovative on that. And so like they always said yes.
That's not everybody's temperament. You know, some people say no quite a bit. You know, like some families say, oh, I'd like to get a puppy. And then the family's like, no. But on the other hand, for a lot of people, maybe the puppy is entertainment. And you're saying yes to things that are work.
Yeah.
The puppy should be work, I think. Well, yeah. You should have to take care of the puppy. You should have to feed the puppy, clean up after the puppy, entertain the puppy, etc.
I would always say yes to a puppy.
Okay. How many? Is there like a limit? Like 12 dogs or something?
We have 2 dogs.
Okay.
We just have a litter of kittens, so we're probably up to 10 cats right now.
Okay.
We have 2 goats. They're both bred, so they'll have spring babies.
Okay.
We have between 6 and 8 cows, depending on who is in the freezer and who
I love it.
Is on the farm.
Okay. How do you raise your cattle? Are they grass fed? Are they corn?
They're grass fed.
Okay, wow.
Yeah,
I can buy a cow from you later.
Sure.
Okay.
That'd be great. Yeah, they're Dexter cows. So they're raised for milk and meats, and they've been a really great addition. Then we have lots of chickens. We raise chickens for meat too. So that's a big endeavor every year.
Your kids are so entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that's the practical. And now some people would say with education, well, there's basically like 2 very broad categories. One is a liberal arts education, which is knowledge for its own sake. You know, so we're going to be well-rounded. We're going to have math and English and science and social studies and maybe Latin. Who knows? We're going to have grammar. We're going to have logic. We're just going to have school for its own sake, so that we can be intellectual and do well in college. And then the other purpose of school is oftentimes, you know, return on investment. I'm hearing all the return on investment type of stuff. What about philosophy and literature and things like that?
Yeah, so I think it's funny that you said liberal arts to be good in college, because I think that we have a liberal arts homeschool, although none of my kids think they want to go to college.
Which I think is totally fine, because I have so many stats on this, but something like 27% of the American public has a 4-year degree, and the other 73 do not.
Yeah.
But college gets sold to everybody as the next step.
Right.
But plenty in that 73% are happy, making a good living, and read books in their spare time.
Yeah.
So I love college and taught it for 20 years, but I just think of college as a tool.
Sure.
And not everybody needs every single tool at every single moment.
Yeah.
You know?
So we do classical education. So, you know, so if I think classical education is a liberal arts education.
Yeah.
You know, it's really rooted in, you know, the classics, like the Greeks and the Romans and how they were educating.
Okay.
But then with the modern way is, you know, so much scripture and Bible and catechism, because we're Catholic.
Right.
There's lots of memory work and poetry and Latin.
Okay.
And
so are your kids reciting poetry?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And are they writing in Latin?
Yes. Okay. Yes. We've done a lot of Latin.
Okay.
Keep Latining on. And it's, you know, I'm getting there too, because that certainly wasn't my background, but so I'm definitely learning alongside of the kids.
Who's teaching them the Latin?
Me.
Okay.
I can do that.
You're learning it as you go.
Yes. You read the teacher's guide.
Yeah.
You have a CD that tells you how to pronounce the things.
Okay.
And, you just carry on because you start in 4th grade. So.
Okay.
I can do 4th grade Latin.
Well, and the nice thing about younger kids is they probably don't say, when are we ever going to use this in real life? They probably just assume, okay, I guess we're learning Latin now.
Yes, they just think, well, you know, it's funny because since we're Catholic, like they like Latin because it's the language of the church.
Mm.
And there's so much Latin that is in the church and on and in the world.
Okay.
And so the way that they've been learning Latin, you know, they're excited when they know like where a word comes from, or when they do like the Latin propers in Mass, or if somebody says carpe diem.
Right.
Like, that's fun for them.
Yeah, carpe diem, seize the day.
Seize the day.
Carpe carp, seize the fish.
Right. Like, they love that sort of thing. And
okay.
So,
do they make jokes in Latin?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we've taken a little bit of Spanish, and you know, the Latin phrases are all like very like manly phrases. Like they'll say like, then we shall fight in the shade, you know, in Latin. And you know, where like all of the like Spanish phrases were like, where is the bathroom? And so they are very underwhelmed by the modern languages because of the way that they're taught, where all of the Latin phrases are so based on like usually Roman wars. And they, you know,
they're exciting because I learned that from teaching history, is that the minute you shifted into, you know, average life or economics, you might as well just give everybody sleeping pills. But yeah, blood and guts and war. And
always works.
All these Latin. Yeah, even the girls like that stuff.
They do. It's
like,
Greek myths.
We're blowing stuff up. Yeah, all these crazy Greek gods cheating on each other, et cetera. It's good
stuff.
Yeah,
Shakespeare. That's a big that's a big win over at our house.
Yeah, Shakespeare's characters are not saying, where is the bathroom?
No, they sure aren't.
Okay, that's really good stuff. Everything seems really wonderful. You know, we've got the academics, we've got the classics, we've got the practical, we've got sports, we've got the arts, we've got the entrepreneurial endeavors. So I was speaking with one friend who does homeschooling, and she said basically they saved time, they saved money, they saved stress, because getting six kids into the car in the morning was basically like World War III and world, you know, war against terror, like all wrapped up in the one or so. It was just horrible. So I just, everything was better. Sure. And then everything was moving faster and the kids were getting along and it was teaching them to work with each other. And then in the afternoon, they could play outside a lot, which was just great for them, et cetera. I asked her what the downside was. So she said, after a lot of thought, that she was apprehensive about starting. And I thought, well, if that was your downside, that's not much of a downside. Can you maybe say, like, what's the downside of homeschooling? Or who is this not for? Either question.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say it's not hard. It's really, really hard.
Yeah, but everything's hard.
But everything is hard.
Right, getting out of bed in the morning can be hard.
Yes. So so it's hard. Homeschooling is hard. It's hard on me. It's hard. It's hard for my kids. But of course, it's but that is, but hard is not the same as bad.
Right.
And but you know, it's and it's messy. Like family life and homeschooling is like literally really, really messy.
Yeah, but if they were in high school, in junior high, et cetera, that would be messy too. They would come home, your seven kids, and they would just like put their stuff like in all over the place. And you'd have to be keeping track of like what Mrs. Smith said about their algebra.
Yes, thank you for reminding me that, because sometimes it just looks like a lot of paper mess and markers and glue and everything everywhere.
So you have to sort of be able to tolerate.
Yeah, so it's a messy. It's only messy until, you know, after school, and then we have very strict chore times, and we have to clean it up. But it can be really messy. Okay. And it's emotionally, like, messy, just meeting everybody where they're at all the time. And, you know, like, just, like, being there, you know? Like, I don't get days off ever. I don't.
But wouldn't that be a lot of parents?
I think so.
In the first place?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And so it's okay. You know, but I do long for, you know, like those early days when I was just homeschooling like the little ones and everyone still took naps and we were done by 11 o'clock. And like I felt overwhelmed then. But oh, goodness, I have really, like, now my days are long. And
I heard one dad say, though, that you just find another gear.
Oh, yeah, it's okay. Like, I've grown into it. I've grown in patience. I've grown in virtue. I've grown in just my ability to, like, keep my cool with, like, all the things up in the air. So, I mean, it's definitely just, like, a learning curve, you know. But I think it's funny, though, that with, like, so many people being called to homeschool and then they, like, don't feel confident in it. I don't understand that because I think God is – like really, if God is calling you to something, of course he will teach, he will help you, you know? Right. And I think that more moms and dads need to really believe in themselves that
But where does confidence come from? I thought confidence oftentimes came from competence. You know, like I'm confident I can tie my shoes because I can do it.
You know, fake it till you make it, you know? Like you gotta just.
Right. That's how you learn.
That's how you learn. You have to model that for your kids. Like I'm not perfect. I don't know everything. Mm-hmm. We're still going to do this.
Well, it's like a lot of people say with entrepreneurship, but I think it's the same thing with sports and things like that. I just, okay, normal people, what do they say? The two most common fears are fear of failure and fear of rejection. So that's like a normal, healthy person is you're going to have some fear of failure and rejection. Yeah. And so, you know, that just makes you try harder, basically, or try smarter or consult with somebody and learn a few things. And, you know, you're going to just stumble and fumble and then eventually you'll do a good job.
Yeah. I remember last year I was talking to my husband and I was like, you know, I don't think we've had a very good homeschool year.
Okay.
And he looked at me and he was like, what are you talking about?
Okay.
You've had the best homeschool year ever. Yeah. And I was like, I have? And he was like, yes, you totally have. Like, everyone is happy.
I mean, I'd say, okay, well, we haven't talked on that. But I guess it's been implied that your kids are very happy.
They are happy.
Now you have five boys, right?
Uh-huh.
So the girls are happy too?
The girls are happy too. The girls just play all day long.
Okay. How old are they?
They are just turned eight and almost five.
Okay.
And I'm just so glad that they're next to each other in age. And so my daughter does a little bit of school with me. She's in second grade. And then her and her sister just live in imaginary lands the rest of the day. Their new thing right now is doing dance class. So they don't go to a dance class. They have made their own dance class. And so they put on recitals every night for us.
Wow.
And they dance to Jesus Takes the Wheel and some other song by Faith Hill. And those are the only two songs they dance to. Okay. And they get all their brothers in a row and they do, I'm going to call it more of an interpretive dance.
Okay.
But that's kind of their deal right now.
Gotcha. It just sounds very charming and fun. What about bedtime and get up time?
I really needed my kids for a long time. I needed them to all be away from me by 8 o'clock.
Mm.
So my oldest kids laugh at me now because they're like, I was the only 13-year-old going to bed at 8 p.m. still.
And then what time are they getting up then?
It's between 6 and 6:30.
Okay. Well, let's see. 8 p.m. to 6, that's what, 10 hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, younger kids kind of need that much.
Oh, sleep, yeah. So everybody's, you know, pretty much in bed by 8.
Okay.
Like my old teenagers don't have to go to bed at 8 anymore.
Okay. Who is this not for?
Who is it not for? I guess people who don't want to try.
Okay.
And people, a lot of people really love sending their kids off to school, you know?
Okay.
And I don't want to discount those things. And I think that there are some great public school and private school communities that are built.
Yeah.
And if that's what you want to be a part of, then by all means, I think that that is probably the best path for you.
Right.
I'm just over here having this call and, you know, I'm going to take it, you know?
I feel like you're having a really bang up stellar experience.
Oh yeah. It's changed my life. Okay. Like I never thought that I would have seven kids live on a farm, raise cows and pigs, you know, in a small town, you know, like this is not what I chose.
You know, the thing is, I just mentioned personally, I like to see if I can try to be creative. And the thing about creative ideas is that you don't get the ones that you want. Maybe you get different ones, but you just have to sort of be willing to go with it if they're creative. And also, too, if you reject a good idea, it circles back an awful lot. And you sort of mentioned that with the homeschooling, that it just kept getting put in front of you all the time. So I think that that's how that works. Like a person might say, oh, well, I want to be creative and I want to be open to things. Well, yeah, but then if it's going to be a farm with cattle and, you know, boys who are getting into a whole slew of activities that maybe you weren't considering as part of your life, like diesel mechanic and welder, you know, then, hey, that's just the nature of a creative endeavor is you could literally end up anywhere.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
Okay. So you like the whole sense of mystery and creativity and surprise?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
It's kind of what makes life interesting, right?
Okay. I'll just ask a few quality of life questions. What's the best part of your day?
Reading. Okay. Definitely. So we start every day, and we start our homeschool every morning at 7:30. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of strict about that. So they get up, they have to go outside and do chores. I require everyone to be outside before school. Otherwise, boys just cannot function at all. That's my experience.
Well, I think it helps. I've been kind of a lifelong fitness junkie, mm-hmm. like lots of marathons and then just weightlifting and mm-hmm. some other things, et cetera. And there's this thing called grounding. You've probably heard of it, but it basically says, well, for 2 million years, people were running around barefoot. And mm-hmm. so then they actually get sort of connected to the Earth's electromagnetic signals. And so like, if we just run around barefoot, that's actually kind of like a health tonic for us. We kind of need it. If you live on the sixth floor and wear rubber shoes all the time, then you're missing out on this whole wonderful health activity.
Right. You know, and my kids can never find their shoes, so they're always grounding. So I think my 2-year-old's worn shoes like 3 times.
You can save money on shoes, just don't buy any.
I really think that's a great way for me.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So they get up, they do their chores, they eat breakfast, and then we start on the couch at 7:30.
Okay.
And we read all the daily readings. Okay. And then we do what we call kind of like a morning time. And we try to have everybody together during this time, and we just do a read aloud. Sometimes we cycle through some other like family style studies. We've done like entrepreneurship or architecture, just like more of like a family style study that we can do in 20 minutes in the morning. And then, you know, I am doing literature-based history and literature-based science, and I'm teaching my girls to read. So I really spend a lot of my time sitting on the couch, cuddled with my kiddos, reading and discussing and reading and discussing.
I mean, it sounds really like a lot of fun.
It's exactly what I would love to do with my whole life, which I guess that's what I'm doing. So it's working out.
Until the last one leaves the nest, and then maybe you could start in on the grandkids.
I know. It's really, that's why I'm so glad I have a 2-year-old. Like, I look ahead, I'm like,
16 more years.
I got
this.
That'll be great. Then I'll be tired by then.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Okay. Gosh, let's see. I asked about the best part of the day, and you're probably saving time, money, and stress. I'm really kind of hearing that. And it sounds like your kids are getting along great. Maybe just a few practical questions. Let's say that a family kind of wanted to get started in this. Let's say maybe they've already been sending their kids to some school, someplace. But, you know, they just want to do this now. So then how do we get started?
Yeah. So I think that what needs to probably be worked on first is maybe family culture. You know, because if you're pulling everybody who used to be all separated back to your home and you're all going to be together, there's probably going to be some bumps in the road.
I'm sure.
So you have to give yourself a lot of grace.
Okay.
A lot.
Okay.
Like more grace than you would ever expect to give yourself. You know, like things are going to be a little bit bumpy and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And so working on family culture, like one of the things that I tell my kids is like, no fighting, no whining, no crying, no complaining.
Okay.
Like I do not allow those things.
No, I know a bunch of people who would violate those rules left and right.
So, but they can't. Like you cannot whine and cry and fight and complain.
Okay.
And
you could be outnumbered. It could be one parent homeschooling, another parent off at a job, and 4 kids at home.
Yeah, the mama has to be strong.
Okay.
You gotta be strong, mom. And you have to put some good habits in place.
Okay.
So, and you have to teach your kids that like we are a team and we are a family.
Okay.
And we are going to do this together.
Okay.
And so that means every single person has to play their parts and hold up their end of the bargain.
Okay.
And they see me working so hard.
Okay.
And I expect them to work just as hard.
I mean, families do love each other, but you know, maybe they fight more if, I don't know, if they've been going to like various schools and maybe they built up some bad habits. Maybe they absorbed a few bad habits from the kid sitting next to them, you know, at 10 o'clock in the morning at the other school. So that's where the grace comes in.
Yeah. So you gotta change the culture. You gotta change it so that you guys can live in peace.
Okay.
And so then I think then the best thing to do is, you know, is to talk to some other families that you know, who have already been doing this a little while.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. And because mamas who have been doing this for a long time and dads too, they're so willing, like they're dedicating their lives to these things and they're willing to like to talk and discuss what's working, what's not. Activities that are important activities to pass on.
Good mentors.
Yeah, just having mentors. You know, so many people are willing to talk about it.
I bet.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's because you know, and the other thing that makes it easy too is that you can really buy like third grade in a box, you know, from lots of different curriculum
That's
companies.
True.
And so if you're worried about like curriculum choices, just start with a curriculum in a box.
Okay.
You can always modify it later. Okay. But, you know, that would give you a good idea on like how to like kind of set some standards for yourself instead of looking, you know, the internet is a trap and will suck the life out of you if you try to like research everything individually on your very first year.
Well, I don't know. I feel like the internet, it's just no different than a lot of other things. Like, let's say buying a car. You know, like, how about I call like three or four dealerships total, or I check like, you know, a few one ads, but I don't check 50.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think, you know, hey, let's look at more than one and let's cut it off after about five or six. Like maybe five or six is about the absolute outer max.
Right.
You know, because, yeah, otherwise, yeah, you get sucked into the internet, you know.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, you're there for the rest of your life.
Right.
So that would not be good. There are some major malfunction areas of our culture, which, okay, they could be good, they could be bad. I think, like, the phone is one. And then I think maybe, I guess, nutritional choices or another. I mean, nutrition matters to me, and I think about it more than maybe I should. But, you know, I've tried every diet there is. And so, like, I just come to the conclusion that natural food is probably the healthiest and that sugar can drive a lot of problems for people. Just the research seems to say that it can drive things like cancer, heart disease, diabetes, depression, anxiety, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of benefits, you know, to just an all natural diet, you know, like roots, vegetables, meat, fish, eggs, nuts, seeds. Stop right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a paleo philosophy.
Sure.
But, you know, hey, a lot of healthy vegans would say, yeah, just don't eat any chemicals. And then carnivore diet, same thing. Like they're all going to kind of say the same thing, which is like, let's just eat natural food. And then that's going to eliminate a lot of bad behavior in people and depression and things like that. What are your thoughts on just any of the pitfalls, not just nutrition, but screens and just anything else that could be a pitfall?
Of homeschooling or of traditional schooling?
Yeah, like what are you trying to avoid?
Like, well, see,
with your family. Like,
yeah.
You said, like, the screens are really, what, they're either not there or they're severely limited? What's going on?
They're not even limited. We just don't really have them.
Okay.
So, and we don't really have, like, as far as nutrition, like, we try to raise as much of our own food as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't buy a lot of snack foods because I hate wrappers. Because if you have a bunch of kids, like, they, you know, have you ever seen, like, juice boxes? Like, there's always, like, a part of the juice box wrapper that doesn't get into the trash.
Okay.
So
then I'll take your word for it.
There is. Or, like, the little piece that you tear off of the snack foods and it doesn't get into there. So I hate wrappers.
Okay.
So I don't buy any snack foods. So,
well, just nutritionally, anything that comes in a wrapper
is not really
good. What you're supposed to be eating in the first place.
And it's expensive. So, yeah, we buy like 30 pounds of apples a week.
Oh,
and,
wow. Okay.
How
do you like them apples?
So they eat a lot of apples. Apples are good. And, yeah, so I don't know. We try to be nutrition, you know,
sounds
eat a lot.
That way. It sounds like you're kind of all natural.
Very
close.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not like a purist in any way. Like,
I wish I were. I'm not. I wish I were.
Yes, I'm not.
I cheat from time to time.
Sure, right. Yeah. Yes, no, I'm not a purist. Like, we don't do a lot of screens, but my kids watch, my little kids watch some Bluey, which is like the best cartoon ever.
Okay.
If you haven't
watched
it,
what's the name of it?
It's called Bluey, and it's really funny. So,
We
watched a little bit of Bluey, and my kids watch a little YouTube, but their YouTube shows are so boring to me. They're always about all of their things that they're interested in.
Like how to weld.
How to weld.
Okay.
Mitchell was watching like how to make like resin art the other day. And I'm like, oh no.
See, but
here
these
we
things
go.
Can be addictive. People can get sucked into these things for like, how do you avoid that? Because I mean, screen addiction is a real thing.
Yeah. So since they don't have any like handheld screens and they aren't allowed to turn the TV on until like really, it's dark until it's dark out, which in the wintertime is earlier, but usually after dinner and it's dark, you know, then I don't know. It's just not really an issue. They're also much more interested in the life that they're living and the things that they're doing.
Well, I think that's great because one of the major fallacies of screens is, and it sounds terrible because my podcast is probably appearing on somebody's phone, but But in it's like it's not I'm not against this stuff. I just think that we have to acknowledge that it comes with some negatives, you know. And I just think that you're doing that, you know. And just one of the negatives is it can be highly addictive, and people can watch YouTube for like 9 hours, and you know, just like they can get sucked into Netflix, and it's just a legitimate addiction.
Yeah, I think that it should be a tool. Not, you know, not like just an entertainment.
Right. And the problem, like when everybody got their own screen, then people started watching other people live life rather than live life themselves.
Right.
So, you know, if you live life yourself, then you get to make mistakes and you get to learn, you know, from your experiences versus everything being abstract, like two steps back because you're watching it through somebody else.
Sure. You know. Absolutely. So. Yeah, no social media for my kids.
Okay.
You know, so that's not an issue for us.
Wow. Wow. Okay. No, if they don't have a phone, it's going to be hard for them to have social media.
Right.
So, okay. Okay. I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens with your 16 and 17, you know, like once they hit, you know.
Right.
17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, things like that.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I should have asked but didn't ask. Like, I guess we were talking about how to get started.
Yeah. So I find a mentor
and just start.
And believe in yourself. You know, if you want to do it, then believe in yourself, work on the culture.
Okay.
And you know, God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called, like that sort of thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I guess if you're an atheist, just be persistent. If this is what you want.
You still can believe in yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What sources, like books, movies, podcasts, things like that, would you recommend?
So one of the first books that I read was a book by a lady named Susan Wise Bauer, and she wrote a book called The Well-Trained Mind, and she actually has an adult version of like how to like be like go all the way through like human civilization to really like, you know, have
be
a well-trained mind,
give
you know?
Yourself a decent education.
Yes, yes. But she wrote a book, and it was all about homeschooling. There's a bunch of editions published, but it was how to, like, basically go from preschool through high school, curriculums to use, ways to do it, schedules to implement. And I read that before I started homeschooling long ago, and I was like, okay.
Wow.
I can do this.
Wow.
That was really, really helpful for me.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds just really terrific.
Yeah. So that was really cool. There's also some, like, other movements that are going on. Like, there's a movement called the Wild and Free Community. And
What's
that? A lot of outside time.
That
and
sounds great.
And unschooling.
Yeah.
There's another movement. And it's not just homeschoolers. It's called 1,000 Hours Outside, which you try to log 1,000 hours for each of your kids that is spent outside. So a lot of like intentional living sort of, you know, situations.
Okay.
So it's really, there's some really beautiful like movements in the homeschooling world that are not really only for homeschooling families too.
Okay.
Like you can send your kids to school and still like get 1,000
hours
outside.
Do a bunch of these things.
Yeah. You can still have a classical education and fill in the gaps.
Okay.
You know, that you see, even if you're sending your kids to traditional school.
Okay. Is there a website or something like that that has all this in one place so that people can jump off from there?
The Well-Trained Mind has a forum that is a good, I mean, really, Facebook is the place to be because well, there's just a Facebook group for everything in the whole wide world.
Okay.
So if you are a if you are a homeschooler, or an unschooler or an after schooler in any community, you will find a group. If you are like, you know, believe in one or the other educational philosophies or, you know, you know, Pinterest, Facebook, they'll point you in a direction.
Wow. Okay, that's great. That's really great.
It's easy to find.
Yeah.
Is my point. Yeah.
Okay. So those are the sources that you would recommend.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And many others too. But one other one I wanted to say is called Dumbing Us Down by John Taylor Gatto.
Yeah.
Read that?
Yes, I have. I think I read that twice. Gosh, he's got about 3 or 4 books that are highly recommended. Do you mind if I just tell people
who
he is a little bit?
Yes.
And so this is a little bit hard for me to say just because I've spent quite a bit of time, you know, as a classroom teacher, both college and high school and things like that. But he was an interesting person. He lived to be about 83 or 84. He was frequently given Teacher of the Year award where he was teaching, which I believe was someplace on the East Coast, like New York or New Jersey, something like that. And he was just like breaking the rules all the time. And so he was like that person who's getting Teacher of the Year because he's getting such great rewards or results. But he was also having other people persistently wanting to fire him because he came to the conclusion that the system is just not working, you know, that it had either deteriorated or it was just never the right idea in the first place, and that really you needed about 100 hours or so to teach the average person how to read, write, and do basic math. And beyond that, he really just sort of adopted kind of an unschooling philosophy. He thought that people should be out and about, they should be exploring, they should turn off their television. He was doing most of his stuff, I think, before cell phones, but then he was probably not just a big fan of like being glued to your cell phone screen, etc. And then he just thought that the school system was inadvertently just giving people a lot of things that were just not good. That culturally, a lot of the students were being pitted against each other, and that was not necessary. And then he thought putting everybody in the same age bracket together was a recipe for keeping people immature, that people could, you know, grow up a lot faster and actually be a lot happier if they had mixed age groups. Gosh, there's just so much else. Like, he felt like schools killed people's love of reading, which, as far as I'm concerned, that's a crime against humanity. You know, like, if people are losing their love of reading, I just drives me nuts. So what am I leaving out?
Yeah, I think that he talks a lot about like the formation of our modern education system too.
Yes.
You know, kind of more designed to create workers out of people.
Yes.
And kind of, I don't want to say button turners, but, you know, pushing these people into like really specialized industries and jobs and careers instead of like producing a lot of people who can think for themselves and advocate for themselves too.
Yes.
I think we're really seeing the results of that, you know, these generations down the line.
Because, mm-hmm. He's got this monster thick book called An Underground History of American Education.
Uh-huh.
And he basically goes back to Rockefeller. And actually before that, okay, so if you go back to Prussia, which was a predecessor of Germany, they were just always getting into a war with somebody. This is in the 19th century. And so then people said, you know what we really need is we need a lot more soldiers in our country. And so if we were going to attain that, what we need is we need factory bells to keep everybody punctual. We need to squash people's individuality and free thinking. We need people who are going to follow orders. We need people who are going to stand up and salute. And so then, you know, people like Rockefeller looked at that, you know, in the United States and said, hey, that seems to be a delightful system because what I want is the nation of workers, not thinkers, is supposedly a famous J.D. Rockefeller quote. So then they wanted to bring that to the United States. And, you know, we went from, you know, in the 1820s, 1830s, nobody is going to school, but everybody is getting an education. Everybody's like learning how to read and write. And it's very typical for people to read Shakespeare. There's just not a lot of competition. There's no TV, there's no radio, there's no film, so there's no electronics. So what else are you going to do with your spare time? Well, you're going to read books.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then once we introduced public schooling, Gatto has the data on this. If you go between, say, World War I and World War II, test scores consistently get lower. So he thinks basically that the system was designed to create these worker automatons who would follow orders. And that's why it was modeled after a factory, you know, like an assembly line scenario, which, mm-hmm. okay, you know, that's Henry Ford and what's the other guy's name? Frederick Taylor, you know, who just really kind of promoted that whole assembly line mentality. And then, you know, I mean, that's maybe Henry Ford's greatest invention, not the automobile, but the assembly line.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So everything becomes paint by the numbers. And that was their major objection.
Yeah. It's a really interesting read. It's not the most happy read.
No.
But it gives you some food for thoughts, even if you don't agree with everything that he is saying. Like, it's still an interesting
And a lot of schools, I think, really try to fight against that. They try to introduce things like project-based learning or like a more creative approach.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of times teachers are just incredible. incredibly well-meaning, and they just want to bring out the best in every individual.
Sure.
And they're trying to see every person as a unique person.
They are.
You know, and whether you teach in a public school or private school, they're just trying to see that, hey, this is, God only made one of these people, mm-hmm. you know, this one over here, and this person is priceless, and their soul will live forever. And so, like, a lot of teachers are really, I think, trying to see that. And a lot of administrators are, too.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, why we have a proliferation of systems. You know, we have Catholic schools, private schools, Montessori schools. We just have a wide variety of things. I think school choice is the way to go, because maybe then we can tailor things to the individual.
Yeah. No, I have a lot of hope, like, for, I of course, I love homeschooling, but I have a lot of hope for a lot of the school systems, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. My sister's kids go to a parochial school in our area, and they're having a wonderful faith formation, and they're learning things, mm-hmm. and I know that the teachers really care about them. So, I mean, I'm not putting down.
No, I'm not either.
Yeah.
I think we're just providing food for thought for people. Gatto's books were all national bestsellers.
Sure.
You know, and he was frequently getting Teacher of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a contrarian, you know, to really help people out.
Sure. Yeah. No, I just think it's important that families live intentionally and don't let any system, whether mm-hmm. it's the school system, the medical system, the food system,
right.
any system, like, just carry us away. And so, I mean, if anything, I just always want to encourage people.
Right.
Individuals, families, you know, to just really think about your choices and decide what's best for you.
Amen. I mean, this is totally what I believe. I will take the medical system, for example. I've got three doctors in my family. I've mm-hmm. got two cousins and an aunt, you know, who are all MDs. And, you know, they do their best to help people. I just firmly believe that the doctor is the employee of the patient.
Sure.
You know, that the patient comes first, and then the doctor is an extremely well-educated helper. And that's how I've always tried to view myself as a teacher, is that I'm here to figure out what's unique and original about you. And I'm here to, you know, pour water and sunlight mm-hmm. on each person. And so, and I just think that a lot of professionals or just workers in general just feel that way, that we're here to really try to help the individual flower as much as possible. So I just think individuals and families come first, and mm-hmm. systems were meant to serve individuals and families.
Yeah, and we could get more and more back to that, and more people could, you know, embrace those things.
Right.
I think that the world would be a much better place.
Well, I think the opposite would be the system exists to serve itself, mm-hmm. and then the people get plugged into the system and, hey, comply. I just don't think that that's what America was founded on.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. So okay. I guess my last question is, let's make it again a little bit more personal. If you were to look ahead, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, what would you like to look back on fondly?
Yeah. So in 15 years, I'll have a 31-year-old and a 17-year-old.
Okay.
So that's a fun, those are fun ideas to have in my mind. And I just hope that my kids can, like, look back and think about all the fun and funny things that have happened in our family life.
Okay.
And I hope that I am raising my kids to love God first and family second.
Yeah.
And to, you know, question the narrative and mm-hmm. to be critical thinkers mm-hmm. and to really be, have the confidence to pursue their hopes and dreams. I hope that, you know, we have set, like, modeled, like, what family life mm-hmm. could or should look like, and that they just really have the confidence to, like, be themselves and to, I want them to be happy.
I love it. That's beautiful. That's the perfect note. And I just really, Stacey, I just really want to thank you for your time. Any last words or?
No, thank you. This was really, really exciting to be on your podcast.
Awesome.
It's my first podcast, so I was really nervous. So thanks for having me.
I should have been the one who was nervous. You were just a delight to speak with.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, we're back. There's one thing I forgot to do, and Stacey was just too nice to bring it up, but I wanted to ask her to promote anything that she has that would be a good resource.
Yeah, so I have a blog. It's called Homeschool Hobbies, and it's where I was inspired by my own kids because of all of the crazy interests and hobbies that they have got into over the years to just sort of help other families get started in some of those things. And I also try to provide some home education support and help for moms that are on this journey with me. So I'd love for you to check it out. It's called homeschoolhobbies.com.
Okay. And do you also have like a social media presence?
I have a Facebook page. It's also called Homeschool Hobbies.
Okay. So people can follow that. Thank you.
Thank you.